Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington, an original shark from the hit television show Shark Tank, and you're listening to the Underdog Podcast. I've been too high up to fall, question marks, what's up with y'all? All we know is overtime, barking like some underdogs. All we know is
overtime, barking like some underdogs. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Underdog Podcast. Today, I have an incredible guest here with me. Peter, how are you, my friend?
Good. Good to be with you today.
It is an honor to have you, my friend. And I am so excited to talk about all the different things. I mean, I was mentioning before this call, I was reading up on you and I was just so amazed at all that you're doing in the world. And I cannot wait to get into your story.
Well, ready anytime.
So I'm going to reel it all the way back, if that's okay, because I really want to know where all of this really originated for you, Peter. So as a kid growing up, like, what did you want to be?
I had no idea. And also I really wouldn't have had any inkling that my life would have taken the course that led me to be on podcasts like this. Really, I guess my journey probably started when I was in my early 20s. And I discovered that I was an accurate medical intuitive. And when my rational mind finally took a back seat and let the intuitive part of me just flow, it opened up a whole vista of experiences. I started having clairvoyance, clairaudient experiences, remote viewing, premonitions, just all sorts of what you would call, I guess, psychic phenomena. And being a Capricorn, I wasn't just content at some point just to let the experiences happen. I wanted to understand, well, what's the basis for all this? I wanted to know the nuts and bolts. So now the rational part of my mind was coming back into play. My left brain was starting to get active again. And it looked like a little video pause there. My left brain started getting active again, and I started actually forming ideas that, well, maybe I should embark on a course of study. First thing I started off with was ancient spiritual traditions. And then from there, I graduated to quantum physics. And the nexus is that both ancient spiritual traditions and quantum physics, when you get right down to the nitty gritty, they concern themselves with three things: light, energy, and matter. And that's what reality is all about. That reality is light, energy, and matter. If it wasn't for light, we wouldn't have the experience of reality at all. Light energy is what allows us to perceive a three-dimensional world, and without that light energy, we really, I don't know what we would be experiencing, but it would be nothing like what we believe. And matter actually derives from a light. We know that from many famous equations in quantum physics, like Einstein's E=mc² and other things. So I got kind of fascinated between the interplay of the energetic and the material world. And it led me into all these things and like writing the books that I've written and so forth.
That's incredible, Peter. That's incredible. And I love that this started from young age. So you had the medical intuition. So like, how did you know? Because I feel like when you were growing up, like now it's a totally different era. Like a lot of this stuff is starting to be a lot more welcomed in society. And like, I've gotten this from my parents too, because I'm always asking them, like, what do you think about the quantum world? What do you think about spirituality and all this? And they're like, Pam, when we were growing up, this stuff was not talked about. Right. No. So how was it at that time, and kind of recognizing that and accepting that, and not, because what happens is sometimes everyone gets activated to their gifts and they run away from them. Right. Or they get afraid of them, or they just like stop because they're like, oh, this is too weird. It's too freaky. And now in this era, it's starting to be more accepted. But way back when, like how was that like, and how did you kind of move forward from all that, Peter? Because I think it's fascinating that you were able to recognize these gifts and accept them and grow into them. And really,
well, initially that was true, but there was a point where I did kind of run away from it, which I'll explain to you. But this was a very spontaneous thing. I mean, I had no antecedents to this. I had no inkling that I would be able to experience any of these things. It just happened kind of spontaneously. And I had always been the kind of kid even growing up where I felt a little alienated. Like I just felt something wasn't right about this world. It wasn't like what it seemed. And I was, you know, probably a little too much in my head and always thinking about the deeper questions of life, even, you know, as a teenager. So maybe what happened was just the answer to all the questions I had. And that's why I was, maybe that's why I accepted this. And I was fascinated, but really what changed my life was when this happened to me. I remember one night in particular, I went to sleep. I literally like sitting up in my bed, and I woke up sitting up in my bed because I had this experience, this overwhelming experience of a unity, a power and a unity. And I started realizing the connection of everything because it came to me. I said, well, you know, how am I able to see what's happening to a person's body that, all they ever give me was the name, age, and address of somebody, no other information. And then I do the readings and I'm thinking, well, how am I able to do this unless we're all part of a totality? And I experienced that totality. It was like a feeling. It was like a lightness that I felt, and it was very comforting and calming. And it was sort of like, the answer to my questions that there is something else out there, you know? So at that stage of my life, I accepted it because it seemed to be kind of like a godsend in a way. But it got to the point where it got out of control. I mean, I would know conversations 10 minutes in advance. I'd see somebody or touch somebody's hand and I'd know all kinds of things about them. It was like really out of control. I got to the point where I was like a sponge and I was absorbing all this information, and it was overwhelming. And that's when I ran into trouble and I kind of got away from it. I did go to London. I was working overseas at the time. I was in Africa and there was a lot of psychically, I was picking up a lot of nasty stuff over there. I was kind of in the area where was the center of the slave trade in West Africa. And but anyway, I went to London to the British Spiritualist Association to get some guidance because the Brits had been much more advanced in accepting about all these things than the Americans had over the years. And so they actually had this the British Spiritualist Institute in Belgravia, Belgrave Square. And I went over there to, you know, to get a little help and guidance. So for a time, I kind of just got out of it all together. I felt I was straddling two worlds, and I had one foot more in the other world than I had in this world, but my body was in this world. So I said, you know, you got to make up your mind. And, you know, and anyway, now, you know, I've reached kind of like a balance. I don't practice a lot of the things that I used to practice. I do not do medical readings anymore, for instance, but certainly I do get information still from other dimensions that have really helped me in my business and professional life and in my personal life.
I absolutely love that, Peter. I love that. And it's absolutely fascinating to hear you kind of talk about your experience with all of this. And it's incredible because you talked about the subconscious mind. You talked about a lot of things. I really want to peel that back a little bit too, like subconscious, conscious mind. Like, how do you tap into your gifts? Like all of these things, and based on your experience, I mean, it's just fascinating when you're talking about remote viewing. You know, some people listening to this podcast might have no idea what that is. I know what that is, but I would love to hear a little bit deeper on from your end, because it's so cool to hear about these gifts that have developed for you and like the clairvoyance and all of that stuff. I mean, just kind of digging a little bit deeper there, because anyone who's listening that could potentially be saying, well, what's the difference between subconscious, conscious? How do we tap into the realms, if you will?
So, well, actually, it's interesting because some of this segues into a soon to be published article that I just wrote called Reflections on a Hidden God. And in answer to the question, if some people don't know what remote viewing is, I'll give you an instance. I was in a room with probably about 100 people, and there was the guy up front who was conducting this session. He said, okay, I have a drawing here that I'm not going to show you. And can you please draw what you think is in the drawing? So I remember thinking, wow, I said, I don't know if this is going to be right because it's kind of incongruous. It was like in the middle of a desert. And it was a lake, and that was what was kind of strange, this lake in a kind of desert setting. And there was a single palm tree in the background, and there was a boat a single boat that was crossing the lake, and you could see this palm tree in the background, but clearly everything else was desert. So, you know, I drew this sketch, and then at the end of the session, when he showed the picture, it was like my picture to a T. He picked it up and he almost like overlaid it onto the diagram that he had. So that's what remote viewing is. Remote viewing is actually being able to see something without physically seeing it with your eyes. I think there's an artist called Ingo Swann, and a lot of his artwork was produced by, you know, remote viewing, even, you know, other planets and things like that. But getting to your point about the conscious and the subconscious and so forth, you know, it's really interesting. Somebody, a philosopher, a skeptic once said, if there is a God, why is he so well hidden? And I just wrote an article relating to that. And it's very interesting because there's a lot of mechanisms that we have in both our minds and our bodies that are very puzzling. For instance, we have a triune brain. We have a reptilian, a limbic, and a neocortex. And these are actually evolutionary stages of the brain. So the reptilian brain governs our instincts, fight or flight, you know, and so forth. The limbic relates more to emotions. And the neocortex, which is the newest and largest component of the brain, relates to rational, analytical, and abstract thought. So we have this kind of triune brain. Then we also have two brain hemispheres. We have the right and the left brain, which are associated with different things. So the left brain, you know, is more your rational, analytic, logical mode. And the right brain is your more intuitive, feeling, you know, uses imagery and so forth. You know, you start to say to yourself, okay, why all this division and these stages of things? And then you further complicate it by looking at how psychologists have divided, though that's body function, right? Though that's actual physical attributes of the brain. But as far as the mind is concerned, psychologists have said, okay, we have an unconscious, we have a subconscious, we have a conscious, and many of them even add a superconscious or a high, what they call a higher self or superconscious. So it gets really puzzling. You say to yourself, why, you know, why all this, you know, why all these layers and these filters and everything? It really does appear like whatever created us is hiding behind something there. And the answer to that really lies, I think, in what the ancients told us about the creation. So, you know, the typical Judeo-Christian story about creation is that there was this external God, kind of like pictured like an old bearded guy on a throne, maybe, you know, used to throw thunderbolts around. But by the time Christianity came around, he was just judgmental. And he created human beings out of the dust of the earth as a separate creation. Like, okay, so like Geppetto created Pinocchio, right? Geppetto was the creator. Pinocchio was clearly the creation, okay?
Yep.
But the ancients, and when I say the ancients, I mean almost every tradition, Hinduism, Buddhism, Kabbalah, Gnostic, Christian mysticism, all said, no, that's not what happened. We are not separate creations. In fact, God created nothing. We are emanations or projections of the very divine source mind itself. In other words, we are an intrinsic part of that. And the only thing that separates us is the degree of frequency or vibration of consciousness. So for instance, in order to have the experience of something outside itself, the great infinite projected other points of consciousness. Now the Gnostic Christians call them aeons, A-E-O-N-S. The Orthodox Christians call them like angels and archangels. They were essentially spiritual beings or other points of spiritual consciousness. And the difference between them was that they had a limited consciousness from the source itself. Okay, and why is that? Well, there's an ancient Greek myth about the birth of the god Dionysius, and Dionysius's mother was Semele, and the father was Zeus, the great god Zeus. And Semele demanded from Zeus, "I want to see you in, you know, your source form." Well, he was light, and essentially she was destroyed or absorbed into the light. Well, that's the same reason that differentiates the source from those points of consciousness that it projects, that it must by necessity have a lower frequency or be diluted, because if they weren't, they'd just be absorbed back into the source itself. And then there would be no perception of individuality. There would be no beings that think of themselves as, you know, yes, I'm connected to the source, but I'm also me. I'm also something different to the source. So there has to be limitation involved. Limitation is the price of individuality. Now, bringing that down to the human experience, so human beings are kind of, you could say, the lowest realm or the deepest realm of this whole spiritual projection of spirit seeking experience in other forms of existence other than pure energy. In order to be or consider ourselves material beings, we had to step down our energy and we had to kind of fool ourselves. Now, the Hindus have a very interesting saying, which is, this world is the playground in which God fools himself. Okay. And in order to think that we're material beings, we had all these compartmentalized mechanisms, the triune brain, the bicameral brain, the conscious, the subconscious, the unconscious. These are all layers that we put between ourselves and our source energy so that we could feel like we have the experience of being physical beings. We're not really human beings seeking spiritual experience. We're spirits having a human experience. And in order to have that human experience, we had to both biologically and psychologically put these mechanisms into place to hide ourselves from our true selves. So that's why God is hidden in plain sight. The kingdom of heaven is within us, as Jesus said. And if people had just stopped there and dwelt upon that instead of building up dogmas and hierarchies and interpretations, you know, we would have been much better off from a spiritual standpoint in understanding our origins.
Right. And that the power lies within us. I think that's the most important thing out of all of that. What you just hit on was so important. It's like we're taught that God is outside of us when it's really within, right? We just need to learn to tap in and accept our gifts.
And I think the process to that is really a reverse engineering process. So if the unconscious contains the knowledge of the source of where we've been, and then the subconscious starts to synthesize that to be useful to the conscious mind so that the conscious mind can grasp these things, then, you know, then it's a reverse engineering process. Okay, we have to go back down through the unconscious levels to get back that source of where we came from. So it's like the reverse of the process that got us here.
It's incredible. Also, too, I was reading up on the quantum spirituality, which I love, because what's happening in our world right now is the coolest thing we've ever seen. And so many people tell me this, like, Pam, we're at a point right now where spirituality and science are finally coming together, finally bridging the gap between the two. And so when I read about you and quantum spirituality, I was like, oh, my God, Peter, I got to know all about this. So for everyone else who's listening right now, that's like, whoa, what's that? Like, what's quantum spirituality? I would love to really dig into that topic because I think it's so incredible. And that's your newest and latest book.
Well, quantum spirituality, the book itself, is really a roadmap. It's a roadmap to help people have experiences with higher consciousness, you know, like I had and like other people have had. And like any roadmap, you want to have at least a couple of coordinates, and that's, you know, north and south, latitude and longitude, because if you're just dealing one dimensional point, you don't know where to go, right? You need references to create sort of a pathway to move forward. And that's what really quantum spirituality is. It takes a multidisciplinary standpoint. So it uses ancient spirituality, quantum physics, biology, and depth psychology, like Jungian depth psychology, among other disciplines. And it cross-references them and it shows how they're pointing in the same direction, what they're pointing towards. Now, in science itself, just one thing about human beings is they all tend to like fall into the same patterns of things. So even scientists who, you know, really broke the stronghold of religion, you know, and the church on human thinking has its own form of orthodoxy now. You have the materialist scientist who I call it, their view of life is life the great accident. They started off with inorganic matter that somehow became organic, although they never really explain how that happened. And that, you know, it kind of like crashed together and combined in ways that led up to higher structures, organic structures, culminating with, you know, like a human being. Well, it's a very, very poor explanation of existence because, you know, from a scientific standpoint, they should be ashamed using their own scientific method, how none of it makes sense. A much more plausible point of view is instead of this bottom-up accident of life, that it's a top-down thing where it started with consciousness and it led down into life and eventually life in material forms. So there's a movement afoot in the scientific circles now where they're starting to deal with what they call the hard problem. And the hard problem in scientific circles equals consciousness. The hard problem is, what is consciousness? How do we explain consciousness? How do we explain abstract, the fact that we can think abstractly and, you know, that consciousness is not something that just appears connected with like brain function. There's something else out there. And there's movements now within science and philosophy called panpsychism, which is the recognition that everything contains consciousness to some degree. It's just a matter of frequency or vibration, so that even a rock is conscious in a certain sense, but it's not self-reflective kind of consciousness because it vibrates at a lower level. So there's a you know, still a minority, but a growing movement in science right now recognizing the role and the importance of consciousness. And it's very, you know, encouraging, I think. So quantum spirituality really is taking quantum physics and ancient spiritual traditions and these other traditions, discussing the origin of life, the nature of reality, and where the human being fits into that whole picture. That's, in essence, what the book is about.
I absolutely love that. I absolutely love that, Peter. It's just so cool to see all of this stuff come together and really just the consciousness and science and all, just everything kind of coming together as one. I think that that's incredibly important. And it's having these examples is really, really key too. But like seeing the differences between the two worlds kind of come together and quantum physics, I mean, I'm in the business realm, so I'm very much on like the logical thinking side of things sometimes, but I'm also highly spiritual. So it's been a really, really interesting kind of balance between my brain structures between the two. So I'm always
trying me to- too. I'm a businessman. I mean, we do luxury hotels. My brother and I do luxury hotel developments, and I've been a businessman all my life. So I'm in the same boat.
I love that. And it's so cool to see the realms come together. And I really want to ask you this question too, because I know that you worked on the real estate side of things too. How has this helped you in the business world when it comes to connecting the spirituality pieces and putting it all together? And the reason why I say that is because the best leaders I've ever met in business have this awareness of consciousness and the quantum physics and the quantum world and all of that. And really kind of want to dive into that piece of it too, because I can sense that from you and just through your work is absolutely incredible.
Well, I mean, it's really helped me in the sense that all of our projects have been successful. It's because of the ability to be visionary and see how things connect and project down the road so that the pieces tie together. So, you know, right now I'm working in a large, keep it an unnamed city, to actually completely revise the urban core, which isn't functioning very well. And I've been the first phase of it, I've been successful in doing. People thought it would be impossible to get it done, but it's because I was able to visualize how all the pieces would fall together, both from the standpoint of function, financially, and so forth and so on. I mean, that's a quality that I believe is a gift from, you know, the spiritual side, to be able to do that. But what I find is that most people tend to have a much more narrow focus about things, whereas I try to look at more at the universality of the surrounding. I try to pull back to 10,000 feet and take a look at things, you know, at that level. And so I guess, you know, from that standpoint, that's the most ready example I can give you of how, you know, these two sides have cross-pollinated, I guess you could say.
That's so amazing and beautiful, though, to say you're able to have that vision and really connect to yourself and connect to these projects and really get in that mode of creation. I find that some of the most spiritual individuals, they're the real estate developers, right? Where we're actual creators of the earth. We create the places and spaces and the memories for individuals to really have and showcase in that space. And how cool is that when we really dig deep? That's it. Like, we're literally creating. we're manifesting.
Yeah, it's like the same thing as I said, quantum spirituality is about creating a spiritual roadmap or arena to help people along their spiritual journey. What I do in the development world is about creating senses of places for people to thrive in the physical world.
Which is absolutely incredible. And integrating the two worlds is absolutely phenomenal. And for anyone who's listening right now too, Peter, like, you know, what would your recommendation be for someone who really wants to awaken and really wants to discover themselves and really like learn how to meditate and tap into consciousness? Like, what would you recommend as kind of like the first steps? Of course, reading the books as well, you know, quantum spirituality for sure. But, you know, just like some, maybe a little exercise or something that you've developed that would be really cool for someone to try out and as a first step.
Well, honestly, it's really hard to answer that question because everybody's road to this is different. Everybody's path is different. And I think you kind of alluded to the first step, though. The first step is you have to have that desire. You know, if you don't have the desire, then, you know, you're just going to continue doing whatever you're doing. I always say to people, look, you got a choice. You want to live in the basement? You want to live in the penthouse? You can survive in the basement very well. You can, you know, have a job, a family, go to the movies, you know, go to nice restaurants and everything else. But it's not really living the fullness of life. Whereas if you're up in the penthouse, you see a higher dimension of things. You see a greater panorama of existence. And, you know, so having that desire is really critical. Now, look, for me, it happened spontaneously. And I'm thankful for that because I think that's the easy path. A lot of people have to hit rock bottom. You know, they have to hit that point of despair where there's no other place to go. And they finally say, okay, you know, I've got to do something different. Now, some of those people will become born again Christians or fundamentalists, for instance. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't criticize it. But other people will take a path that I think is a little bit more open-ended and constructive. And they'll start, you know, maybe to pursue a spiritual path. So you can attend classes that deal with this stuff. You can look at inspirational speakers and so forth. But I think the most important thing is that at some point, no matter who you listen to or what you're told, you have to develop a way to discern these things yourself. Okay, you have to become your own prophet. So like when I speak publicly, a lot of times I say to people, don't believe a damn thing I'm going to tell you. And they'll sit there scratching their heads and say, well, what did I pay to come to this for? And, you know, but you know, what I'm really saying to them is I can give you a kind of signposts or roadmaps to help you along your spiritual journey, but you've got to commit to do that yourself. It's like anything else in life that you want. If you want something, you have to take the responsibility to go after it and get it. Okay. So if you want to buy a car, you got to get a job and, you know, you got to get your mortgage or whatever the case is. You take the steps necessary to get that car. Spiritual awakening is the same thing. Take the steps to get to spiritual awakening, whatever that is for you. But at the end of the day, you don't want to just rely on the inspirational speaker or me or anybody else, because I can sit here and tell you that fire burns, but until you put your hand in the fire, you don't know that for a fact. Okay. That's where you want to be. You want experiential knowledge of these things, not taking something on faith. Faith might be a good stepping stone to start off, but ultimately, you want to evolve beyond faith into direct knowledge or direct experience with these higher conscious forces. So, you know, quantum spirituality is a very good first step because it's so thorough and encompassing, and it hits this issue from so many different disciplines. It appeals to both the left brain and right brain type of people. And it can be a big help, and not just my book, but there's other books and speakers out there. But ultimately, your intent and your aim ought to be having these direct experiences yourself. And when you do, and it gets validated in the real world, when your intuition about things starts to show results or gets validated in the real world, you know you're onto something. And start using that intuition. Let it flow. And start using it. And it does change over time. It does change your life almost miraculously, because miracles don't happen like in Hollywood, bells and whistles and fireworks going off. They happen in increments over periods of time, but it starts to move you from one place where you're stuck in to an entirely new direction where you can progress, no matter how slowly. It's starting that process is the thing.
Absolutely. And you mentioned intuition because everyone kind of references that word, right? Intuition. And what does that feel like for you? I tell people all the time, I'm like, hey, it could be that pit in your stomach that's telling you something. It could be those little voices that you hear inside your head because people are like, well, Pam, like, what is consciousness, right? So I'm trying to break it down on like the easiest level possible. And I'm like, well, this it's your intuition, right? It's what we label your intuition. And really, like, that's your higher self talking to you and basically trying to guide you. And I know for myself, there's many times where I didn't listen. And then there's times that I leaned in. And those times that I leaned in was always so much better because anytime that I didn't listen, I always paid the price, right? So it's like
Yeah, well,
intuitively, we all know.
it's very funny, but most people dismiss intuition information in almost the same instant that it arises because our logical minds are like a kill switch. And I mean, like I say, you're in it just can happen in the same instant it arises, and you almost didn't even know you had the intuition. But if you learn to listen and you catch yourself, and you say, I have a really strong feeling about this, and don't let the other part of your mind say, oh, that's ridiculous. Start to listen to it, and it's like it's like a little energy surge or a tingle or a first impulse or a first thought. Learn to pay attention to those things because that's often your intuition prodding you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it starts off small. And then the more that you listen, I feel like the more that it amplifies. And it's interesting because even like most recently, it's like the ringing of the ears and all these things start to like certain things start to activate. So one of my very best friends, she is an Akashic Realm reader. And she's also a psychic medium and she's absolutely incredible. But she really specializes on gift structures. So she talks about all these different things that sometimes help people shut out and do all these different things. So it's really interesting to hear all these different perspectives when it comes to this. And she's always guided me and she's like, Pam, that's your gifts amplifying. I'm like, what does that mean? I'm like, okay. I was like, I'm paying attention, So it's just so fascinating how it kind of, how it kind of all comes together because it really does start really subtle, right? Those small little things, and then they can amplify into so much more. Like in your case, you're like, oh my goodness, started seeing the clairvoyance and then doing these this remote viewing and all these things that you weren't even aware of the gifts that you had. And it's pretty incredible what we're capable of, especially if we let it flow through, right? We can easily get scared and block them. Right. But to allow that to come in, I mean, that's our connection to higher source, which is incredible. And Peter, I have an interesting question for you because I hear this, I've been hearing this word a lot lately, quantum leaping. So, and when you talk about different dimensions, I would love to hear your thoughts on that and what your thoughts are in connection to all of this.
Yeah, well, quantum leaping in strict quantum physical terms is when subatomic particles change their orbits. Let me give a good analogy. Think of the way that planets orbit around the sun, okay? So it would be like all of a sudden if Jupiter just popped up in the place of Mars. It just took a without any intervening discernible movements of position. I just kind of popped up into a higher orbit or a different orbit. That's the definition of a quantum leap. Now, we also talk about quantum leap in a pop cultural sense, when somebody has, well, I guess what would have happened to me, like when I found out I was a medical intuitive, right? That was a quantum leap in consciousness, from my everyday consciousness to something that was not really explainable in everyday conscious terms. So that was a quantum leap in consciousness. So I guess you can say that, quantum leap, it really depends on the definition of how you want to use it. But it often, generally speaking, means a change, a sudden change without any intervening antecedents or ways to track the movement. It doesn't go in a staccato point A, point B, point C. It's like going from point A to point Z, in an instant.
That's incredible. It's a lot of people lately talking about, like how their life just feels like, especially like in the past few months, has been like rapid shifts. And they're saying that the frequency on Earth is getting so much higher. And so a lot of people are like basically like their lives are accelerating at very high speeds. And it's been really interesting. So I don't know if that's been your experience lately too, but I'm hearing a lot of people really talking about that. They're like, I feel like there's been like a quantum leap in the last like 60, 90 days. I know that's more like pop culturally, but I wonder if that's something that you've experienced as well, that you're just like, oh my God, like this stuff is like moving so much faster. Like we're feels like we're in a totally different dimension kind of thing.
Can't say I really have experienced that. I mean, the world is, is always rapidly changing, and it's uneven. I mean, you have, well, for instance, discoveries in quantum physics often don't reach the general public for years. When they discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels, which are, very eye-opening chapters of history that often contradict the history we've been given, it took like 50 years for that to get to the public, and then it took many more years afterwards for, for it to be absorbed. And I think the whole idea of knowledge, it's uneven. I liken it to, like, okay, in the old days in the West, you had the pioneers way out west who were experiencing all kinds of things that took a long time to reach back to Boston and New York in those days. Totally different realms of experience. I mean, think of it. Think of somebody in the West, okay, in the 1840s or 1850s, and then think of somebody in the urban areas like Boston and New York, and just the world of different experience. And yet, what was happening out West was shaping the American experience in the future. It was happening then, but it wasn't realized by the people back East until many, or felt by them until many, many years later.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that makes total sense. I mean, it's just there's so many things that we're learning now too. I mean, they're even still discovering things in Egypt. I mean, there's a million different things that are happening that we're finding all these hidden discoveries and truths about life. And I was mentioning my friend earlier, Jesenia, she wrote a book called Creation as well, which she said this is kind of like the antithesis of the Bible, almost, if you will. And it's got some really interesting perspectives. And I'd love to hear your perspective regarding like what's one of the most important things for others to know about quantum physics or spirituality, just like in general. One of like the big misconceptions or something that we want to break down or some truths that we may not know about. Like you said, those Gnostic.
I think probably the most obvious thing to me is that we live in a kind of simulated reality. The Hindus call it Maya or illusion. And quantum physics tells us right on the face of it that something weird is going on, because we think of this world as something solid. Okay. I mean, you can knock on the wall in the background of your video there, and it seems very solid to you. But in actuality, it's composed of subatomic particles that are in motion and that are vast distances apart from one another. It's not solid at all. In fact, the composition of the atoms is 99% space and light energy, and only 1% mass or matter. And we're fixated on the 1% to the ignorance of the 99%. What they've discovered, even at the very earliest stages of quantum physics in 1900, the father of quantum physics, Dr. Max Planck, a brilliant German physicist, said that, "I can assure you of one thing, there's no such thing as matter. That anything that we think of as matter is something that is brought to a point of vibration by a higher intelligence. There is, at the very basic levels of reality, there are no such things as particles. What there are waves of light energy. And under certain circumstances, there will be little cul-de-sacs that will collapse into particles, into particle form that give rise to universes like ours that are apparently 3D universes." So, I'm here in Florida right now, and many times I used to look over a river, a still river, and there would be a water spout there. And water spouts are essentially like mini tornadoes that are formed out of water. I mean, literally, they spiral up from the water just like little tornadoes. And yet the river itself, the water itself, is very smooth. The scientists are saying that essentially that's what happens on a cosmic scale, that it's all a wave of energy. But under certain circumstances, these blips or blemishes happen in the quantum energy field. And that's where the what they call the collapse of the quantum wave, you might have heard that expression, and that collapses into a particle formation. So the water spout is like that blemish. It arises out of the smooth water, and yet it looks like something different, but it's not. It's composed of that smooth water underneath, but it's a disturbance that looks like a separate thing. It looks like a separate universe. It looks like a separate thing, but it's not. It's really just a disturbance in the energy field, in this case, in the river. So I think that's the best analogy that I can give you of what, you know, really basic reality is about. It's not at all about what we've seen. You know, where Einstein's E equals squared said that matter comes from energy and it dissolves back into energy. So matter and energy are interchangeable. Matter really is a function of light energy, which is not solid to begin with. So there's some of your paradoxes and some of the stuff that we have to wrap our head around in the quantum world.
Yeah, the quantum world is a magical place, and I'm trying to absorb all of it. I mean, I think it's just absolutely fascinating. I mean, see, like I said, the bridge between science and spirituality is unbelievable, and it is so cool what we can learn about ourselves, about the world around us, and all that. Like when you break it down, and you're saying, hey, it's 1% matter. For some reason, we're so fixated on that 1%, forget about the other 99%. It's like, you can't hack life without knowing that, right? It's everything is energy at the end of the day. And if you know how to do that, how to alchemize that, how to utilize it, and really understand that you can create your own reality, that's when power comes in. That's when you take your power back and you say, what do I want to create today? You know, most of us aren't aware of that. And so for anybody who's listening, like, I hope you guys can really capture this, that you create your own reality in the most beautiful ways, and tapping into your consciousness and into yourself and into the quantum world, quantum spirituality, as Peter mentioned, is life-changing. It's absolutely life-changing. And Peter, I would love to hear what you're going to say on this one, because there's so much knowledge and there's so much depth in all the amazing stuff that you do. So I'm wondering, what would your older self tell your younger self based on what you know now? It's my favorite question. So I always save the best for last.
You know, the funny thing about it is that I don't have a very good sense of time. And my older self and my younger self, other than maybe looking in the mirror occasionally, don't seem that different. I mean, it sort of seems, it's just like a continuum. And I've never, you know, I don't celebrate birthdays, you know, because to me, it's just an artificial construct, you know, besides the fact that I like, you know, I still like to think I'm probably 20 than I'm, you know, what I'm way much older than that. But in all honesty, it's hard for me to answer that question, because for me, it's more like a, you know, like a continuum. I mean, I might have told myself, you know, some of the knowledge that I have now that I didn't have back then, some ideas that I have now about, you know, that are a little bit more clear and concise about things. I might have clued myself in about that. But other than that, it's hard for me to answer that, because I just don't have that. I don't have a typical sense of time like a lot of people have.
I love that. I love that, though, that it's a continuum, but we're infinite souls. So that makes absolutely perfect sense, Peter. You know, it absolutely makes sense. And I'd love to hear, like, in your world, like, what's going on in, like, the next, like, few weeks, few months? Like, what's going on in Peter's world? And you mentioned an article that was coming out, so that's fantastic.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I wrote a trilogy called The First Souls Trilogy, which has won 25 national and international awards. It was actually my first books. And they come like a real kind of cult hit. And it's about the first souls that incarnate into the physical world. And it traces their lives over different epochs of history when humanity is faced with either evolving or, you know, sinking backward. And the first book is called Pope Annalisa, about an African nun who becomes the first female pope at a time when America and Iran are going into a nuclear war. And it's actually Om Times Magazine did a whole article in the book about all the geopolitical predictions that came true in the book Pope Annalisa. And I have a partner who was a former executive at HBO and working on getting that into a TV series. So, you know, I decided initially when I started writing, there's two ways to go. I could do something that was more academic and instructional, or something that was more entertaining to get the sort of, you know, message out in a more entertaining way. And that's the first thing I did, was write the trilogy, the First Soul Trilogy. Then a couple of years ago, I said, you know, I did all this research that was like kind of the thematic underpinning of the fictional trilogy. So why don't I put it together into a nonfiction book and, you know, make it a little bit more pointed and instructional on how people can have experiences, extraordinary experiences with consciousness. And that resulted in the book Quantum Spirituality, which actually the publisher just entered it into the first of several book awards. It entered it in four categories in the American Book Fest Best Book Awards, and it won first place in all four categories.
Wow, that's unbelievable. That's absolutely unbelievable, Peter. And I'm not surprised, to be honest, as your depth of knowledge and the way that you break things down is absolutely fascinating. And the world needs to learn all of this. I mean, I've learned so much from you even just today. And I'm like, I can't wait to dig into the books in like full detail because I love this stuff. I'm always thinking about like, how are we going to continuously elevate? How do we connect to our higher selves? How do we connect to source, God, whatever everyone wants to call it, like to higher power, however you want to recognize it, right? So it's just, this absolutely fascinates me. And it's so life-changing too, when you can understand how the universe actually works and all the universal laws and quantum physics and how everything comes into play. It just changes your whole perspective on how you do life, really. Which is,
yeah. I mean, it's a great journey. You know, it's a great journey. And my hope is that, you know, quantum physics becomes an important tool for people on their particular journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this article that you've got coming out, is that coming out in the next few weeks? Where is that, so that we can kind of look out for it?
Probably the first place it'll come out is the Biz Catalyst 360, which is a big online forum of articles. Usually come out Medium, and then my publicist. I mean, literally, I just sent this into them today, so it'll probably be appearing in several other, you know, publications, which I don't know yet, but I know it's going to get some traction because it's a very interesting article. And then, you know, some of these places, they just, you know, whatever articles I write, they'll take. So I know it's going to get out there somehow. But I think what I would like people to do, honestly, is go to my website, petercanova.com. It's PETERCANOVA.com. It has a wealth of articles, videos. It has portals to my own podcast called Quantum Spirituality, and also to, the different books that we talked about, the First Souls Trilogy and the new Quantum Spirituality book. And, even if you don't buy the books, I think you'll find it very informative. But Quantum Spirituality, it's available at all the online booksellers and some bookstores, and check it out on Amazon. It's got close to 60 reviews on Amazon, and they're, you know, like 90%, I think, 5-star and a few 4-star reviews. So that's kind of a good way to just get familiar with some of the things that we've been talking about here much more in depth.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to dig in and in depth on those as well. And thank you so much for dropping those links. And we'll make sure to include those in the show notes as well, Peter, so everyone can kind of go and check out the books and all about you and learn all the amazingness that you're up to. And I just wanted to say thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time today, for hearing all of your insights and just all about your books and just really everything. You can feel the depth and the passion behind what you do, and just so grateful. And for everyone who's listening, please do follow Peter, check out his website. He's got more and more interesting things coming, I'm sure. And I'm excited to read all about that new article that you have coming up and beyond.
Great. Well, thank you, Pamela. Good to be on your show. Thank you very much.
So that's it for today's episode of Underdog. Catch us next week, always dropping on Thursdays. And remember, if you're interested in real estate or want to learn how to create more money and magic in your life, check out meetwithpamela.com and let's chat. Sending you so, so much love. All we know is overtime, barking like some underdogs.